Welcome to episode 88 of the Eat for Endurance podcast. My name is Claire Shorenstein, and I'm a board certified sports dietitian and runner based in Santa Cruz, California. Today, I am bringing a former nutrition client of mine on the show for an athlete nutrition profile. His name is Trey Duncan, and he just ran a 2:57 and placed second in his age group at the LA Marathon, which was his first marathon. What a different place he is in now compared to just 2 years ago when he was suffering from years of alcohol abuse and was about to enter rehab. He originally contacted me in August 2022, not long after finishing his program and getting sober, and we worked together on his nutrition for about 7 months. He had gotten back into distance running and needed a major overhaul of his everyday diet, a ton of work on other parts of his life like sleep and stress, and I helped him learn the basics of performance nutrition and apply that to his longer runs. I also recommended him to a coach so that he could train smarter because he was very prone to overtraining. Trey would occasionally get in touch after we stopped working together to share some wins from his running, and most recently he texted me about his LA Marathon results. After we caught up for a bit, and he had sent me this photo of him passed out on the streets of LA just 2 years ago, side by side with a photo of his recent marathon finish, I asked him to come on the show to share his powerful story. Just an FYI, I didn't do much prep for this one. I mostly just wanted to have a chat with Trey and see what would come up and what he wanted to share. I hope you enjoy it. And if you are struggling or have ever struggled with any form of addiction, I hope his story resonates and helps. So without further ado, here's my athlete nutrition profile of recreational distance runner, Trey Duncan. Trey, welcome to the Eat for Endurance podcast. Yeah. How is your day going so far?
It's really good, and I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you. It's so good to see you again, too.
It's funny. I was like, when was the last time we actually saw each other during a session? And I realized it was February 2023. I had to like look back at my old notes.
That was the last one.
It was a while. Yeah. It was a while.
Yeah, so, I was training for a marathon for all. This was my third attempt. I kept getting injured, but yeah, that was the last one. I saw you. It's been a little over a year ago. Yeah.
Well, first, just want to kick things off. Huge congrats. I'm so proud of you. You smashed the LA Marathon and with a sub-3 hour. And you got the age place, or it was the second place in your age group, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wait, how old are you right now?
51.
There you go. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. No, wait, was this your first marathon finish?
Yeah. First marathon attempt.
Oh, okay. So I didn't realize that. I thought you had run a marathon already. Oh, well, that's amazing. How are you feeling? How's recovery been going?
Great. It feels really good. Yeah. And I start training tomorrow for, you know, my favorite race is the Brooklyn Half, and that's on May the 18th. And I go right into that tomorrow. So
why is it your favorite race?
History there, you know, I've done it 3 or 4 times. I love the race. I love the event itself. I love running through Brooklyn. And then just, you know, where I am today versus where I was.
Yep. And we'll get into that.
Yeah. Some of that.
Yeah. Well, first, I mean, let's just focus on the present for a minute.
Of course.
What do you want to share with us about the LA Marathon? Tell us about your experience, how you were able to get to the start line feeling strong. Whatever you want to share about that.
I felt so lucky. I had tried the LA Marathon last year, 2023. I had to pull out. I got a stress fracture in my hip, and then I ran on a slight stress fracture. I almost turned it into a full break because I couldn't accept the fact that. Then I learned a hard lesson. And then I attempted the CIM in November of 2023, and I pulled a calf muscle.
Oof.
And it was just, and then, so to get to the, then to just get him, just get him there. I have a coach, John, he introduced
me. Yep.
So it was just get to the starting line. And this one had its, it's had a couple of its, tweaks. For example, I did this half marathon in January to get ready for it. And I thought I may be done. I did something to my ankle, then I did my calf. Then the week, I got some cold thing and I was powering vitamin C and zinc. And then toward the end, it was just get there and everything came together. It was such a magical experience for me. Everything came together you know, just that day. And, you know, I've been doing everything that I put in my body, the way I live, nutrition is what we, you know, you don't know. I mean, everything I do is because of you. So, you know, I've got my pre-race, my long run and my pre-race looks kind of the same, but mm-hmm. I got fully situated for this. I got a hotel room downtown. I wanted this to be because I didn't know when I would have the time and working to do this again. And I wanted mm-hmm. everything to try to line up right. So I got a hotel room downtown and I got to the starting line. I got there on time. I had my pre-race nutrition down, you know, evacuation, everything, which is crazy important to me, you know, and, and then I hadn't run one before. So I had a plan with my coach and I didn't really stick to his plan. I didn't get into
Chris, you did it. That's not a surprise.
I didn't get into the A Corral because LA okay. only takes, you know, I have a bunch of half marathon. LA doesn't take, a half marathon time. So I got in, you know, I joined the LA Roadrunners. I got into the B Corral. So there mm-hmm. was a lot of this, you know, in the beginning, but then it opened up fairly quickly. And then it was just kind of surreal and a blur. But I do remember, the memorable points of the race. There were a couple. Mile of 10 or 11, like there's some psychological stuff, some mental, that crept in.
Mm.
And I started to slow down, you know, because I was supposed to run a 650 pace to the last 10K and then maybe turn it on. And I'm with the watch and all that. I wasn't mm-hmm. with the pacer. So I was running in the 640s. And then like around the 11th mile, I started slowing down. And I noticed it was my thought. It was like negative thoughts.
Mm.
And I had to like really adjust and I had to kind of like, you know, get back right in my head. And then it was very strong thereafter. I pulled together a bunch of 630s and in that range. And then I started noticing another noticeable difference was I started running, really powering through with my core and using like my running technique, my running form. I hadn't really felt it like that before. And then there were no really difficult, hard, incredibly hard moments through it. Mile 24, started to get like mile 19 was hard for me because it was psychological, get to 20 and then mile 24, I just kind of slowed down. But it was a good race. It was a great race and I'm very pleased with it.
So. That's awesome. So one of the things that John, your coach, shared with me was that, you need constant pulling back, which I kind of chuckled at because I'm like, that is a lot of what I was doing with you, if you remember in the beginning when you didn't have a coach and I was like, you need a coach. But I'm really glad. Yeah. Yeah. I just reached out to him. And cause I was like, I'm so proud of him. He's doing great. And John's like, yep, he's doing great. He just needs constant pulling back. And I'm like, absolutely he does. Cause you just want to like go, go, go all the time. And I don't know if you remember when we were working together, you'd be like running all around and biking all around and walking all around. I'm like, dude, you need to rest. You need to stop. So I'm really glad you have a coach. That. Yeah. I remember all kinds of stuff, but you know, I'm really glad that you have a coach to kind of support you and all that. And, that's awesome.
Yeah. And the team that comes with it, the Henwood Hounds,
totally.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So there was a great race. I don't know. The race was just amazing. So
what did a couple more questions about LA and then we'll hit rewind. Yeah. But what when you hit those kind of tough psychological points, how did you kind of turn that around? And I know we're gonna get into kind of your history and your story, and I'm sure you've learned some tips and tricks there through therapy and all of that, but how did you get through those points?
I realized that if I didn't make an adjustment, things were gonna go bad.
So what was the adjustment? Like how did you get yourself out of the negative self talk?
The thought, I changed my thoughts. I changed my thoughts. The bottom line. I mean, I knew what the thoughts were and I changed them.
Good.
And, you know,
Awesome.
There was I'm fortunate enough to know Michele Graglia, who's one of the greatest ultra runners out there. He won the Moab 240, the Badwater 135. And he was talking, you know, I kind of started to delve into outside of the, you know, the nutrition, the body, the mind, the body, the spirit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like playing in that, you know, that's kind of, and so it was kind of just coming, a lot of just do a lot of work I've done.
Awesome.
You know?
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So let's hit rewind now. Often what I do with these nutrition profiles is, you know, I like to start with, you know, your nutrition roots, as I call them. Yep. I know I was actually looking back on our very first note, cause I was like trying to remember some just like little details about your history. And I was reading that you grew up in Texas on a farm. I think you had said you guys, the farm was beef and rice, or cattle and rice. I mean,
that's right. Yeah.
And I'm sure that shaped many memories you have about food and mealtime and all of that. And I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
Well, so, you know, this can just be full honesty. You know, we were Coca-Cola's, you know, in the '70s, get Hot Pockets and Coca-Cola's and Doritos. And, you know, there was, you know, my dad was a cattle rancher and I grew up on a rice farm, but you know, what he did for a living didn't necessarily make it, you know, that aspect and the food aspect weren't the same. And so, I didn't know how to eat as a kid, and I didn't, so I just kind of ate like other, you know, I just ate what tastes good. And another part of my story was, you know, I used food early on in my life to self-soothe. And I found out a lot about this later in life, but so I had a fairly unhealthy relationship with food, for a very long time, you know? So that was my first coping mechanism, was food.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So just, you know, childhood stuff. I used that as my first way to kind of, I think it was an escape, you know, it was to soothe myself. It was with food. And then, you know, later it became other things. But that was my first. So I didn't have a strong nutritional foundation as a child to build on, you know, later.
Did your family eat together at all? Or
we
was
did.
It kind of,
we did. Yeah, okay. We did. But then as we got older and in high school, you know, we scattered, but when we were younger, we did.
Yeah. And at what point?
Mom,
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
We did. We sat around the table quite a bit, but then as we got older and in high school events and extracurriculars.
Hello.
Yeah.
We have a visitor.
Faye.
Who's that?
Yeah. Faye. So, my 7th Faye. Month old doodle.
Oh, so cute.
Yeah.
Hello. So at what point do you, that's so cute. At what point did you start using food as kind of that self-soothing?
I was on Herbalife. Young, I think, you know, second grade.
Like you and Herbalife, meaning like?
I had a weight problem. As a kid, you know.
You had a weight. Okay, so it was a weight thing that you were doing. Okay, can you? Do you feel comfortable sharing more about that?
Of course. Yeah. I was just a chunky kid, you know, and I used to love to escape. It was all about escapism. So it was food and it was television. It was, you know, it was a lot of sedentary, you know, I would escape through television and food. And then, you know, I got overweight and, I broke my arm like 3 times before I was 10. So that didn't help. So, you know, I started putting on weight and then, you know, it was kind of, and then I, in high school, I lost a bunch of weight. Around my junior year, I lost a lot of weight because I discovered, you know, girls and, you know, I wanted, so then I just stopped eating to lose weight, you know, it wasn't, you know.
So it sounds like your mom was your mom kind of putting you on a diet then? Was she trying to get you to eat less? Okay. Yeah. And then, so then were you doing like secret eating or kind of that kind of stuff?
It was secret wasn't necessary.
Oh, okay.
It was, you know, a lot of donuts on Sunday morning, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of restrictions, dietary restrictions in the home.
Okay. Yeah. But your mom wasn't trying to like get you to lose weight though? Because
she was.
Oh, she was, but you would eat anyways, essentially.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Were you active at all as a kid or in high school?
So BMX bike and, you know, I tried baseball. I wasn't very good at it. And then in high school, I was on the golf team, which was a fairly, you know, not a lot of, by that time I lost much weight though. That was after I, you know, around 16 or 17. But I wasn't very active. And then I started running. I just, you know, I, I started running a little bit when I was around 16 or 17, when mm-hmm. I was on my first weight loss journey. And that was just easy. Put on a pair of shoes and I could run. There was a 2 mile loop in my neighborhood. And I would do that. And I guess I kind of liked it, you know? And then I've noticed running was a constant theme throughout my life. Even, you know, in college, if I were going to get some kind of physical activity in, it would be through a run and after college. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I ran my first half marathon in 2015. And, well, you know, didn't really think I ran 140. So I've always kind of had an ability to do it. Just didn't know at what level until yeah. much later.
Yeah. We're going to revisit running for you, obviously, but I want to explore a little bit more. You know, you said that you basically stopped eating to lose weight. And
yeah.
So that was when, you know, you were in high school and yeah. Can you share a little bit more about yeah. that experience and how that kind of,
yeah, I was
that, what that trajectory was like through college and kind of just sharing a little more about your relationship with food and
yeah,
how that went.
I mean, I essentially was like an anorexic, you know, I got down to about 135 pounds. I just didn't eat. Not to eat. Yeah. I would not eat. And mm-hmm. I lost a bunch of weight, and then that was cool. That was, you know, then you got, you know, you look great, you know, from friends and family, and you know, and you felt great. And so
did you feel great?
Well, you didn't. I don't remember how I felt as far as my health goes. I mean, I didn't feel like I feel today, but you know, I was thin, and you know, a lot of that's, you know, that was important because I was bullied, you know, when I was a kid for my weight.
Yeah. 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 What gave you the idea to just kind of stop eating? Is that just something that kind of came to you?
Yeah.
Since you loved food so much, right?
If you don't stick it in your mouth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did that time. I found tobacco and I found other, I developed other bad habits. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say, when did like substances enter the picture?
I started drinking when I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so I started drinking when I was 15. And then I started, you know, And then over time, you know, I was there. So
when did it become a problem?
It started, I didn't drink hard alcohol until like 2014, I think.
Okay. So a lot later.
Look, my experience and my understanding is that, if you have this, you know, disease, you know it. When did I know it? Like, when did it hit me? Young, you know, probably like 19, 20, you know, I had something was different about me. My relationship with alcohol was different than other people's relationship with alcohol. I knew that, you know, and then
how did you know the definition?
The way it made me feel, the way I used it, I was from a small town. I went to USC,
mm-hmm.
and it allowed me to, you know, to approach my ex-wife. It allowed me to, you know, break out socially and kind of shed the insecurities that, you know, came from being a ranch kid going to, you know, a big city. And, but I could, you know, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. How did I know it? You just knew it, you know, you just kind of know.
And was it always just alcohol or was there anything else?
I'm going to push my dog off. No, just alcohol. I'd smoke pot, but nothing beyond that.
I remember in our session or when I was looking back at my notes, you had shared with me that you drank every day for 20 years that you had been sober. So we met in August of 2022 and you had been sober since April. And you sent me a picture the other day of you was that on the streets of New York City? Where was that?
That was in LA.
LA. Okay. So that was in LA.
It was almost 2 years ago to the day.
Yeah. And you were passed out.
That was when I had just kind of given up. That was right before I decided. That was two or three days before I decided to get sober.
Yeah. So I'd love for you to, maybe you can take us through this journey a little bit with, you know, your substance abuse and how it maybe progressed and what kind of, because I mean, you were working, you have three teenage kids, like you had all these other things going on. You ran a half marathon through all of this, right? Like there are all these things going on.
A bunch of them.
Exactly.
I would go to the ashram in Calabasas, which is a health and wellness, it's a famous health and wellness retreat. You know, I'm the only guest who's ever done it 3 weeks in a row, you know? I was always, health and wellness, you know, was always something that, was important to me, you know, and I always had the desire to kick this thing I had. I just, you know, just never really knew how to do it. So it's progressive. And then, social at first. And then eventually, you know, the pandemic was what kind of brought it, you know, accelerated the bottom, if you will.
Mm. So was it kind of manageable until then?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How much would you drink a day?
Well, I mean, it depends on the decade, you know. You know, it would. Oh, too much. I mean,
that's all relative. What is too much, I guess?
Well, I don't know. I never counted, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the pandemic happened. I remember you telling me you stopped running and at some point you lose your job. You're in finance.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure when that all that lined
was,
up.
That's when, so my group, we kind of shut down. The work thing, the pandemic, I handled things, you know, that's when I didn't handle things well.
Mm.
And I started to then lean into alcohol in early 2021,
mm-hmm.
like never before.
Mm.
You know,
were you living in New York or LA at that point?
LA.
Okay.
You know,
were always in LA. You were not in New York at all until we met?
I was in New York until late 16.
Oh, okay.
And then I moved back to New York in June of 2022.
Got it. When we met.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So I was in New York from June of 2022 to March of 2023.
Got it. And you were kind of living bi-coastally, like your family was always in LA, right?
So I had, you know, my career was, you know, New York finance, from my early 20s to later in my 40s. And then I moved the family to Los Angeles in late 16. And I would go back and forth between New York and Los Angeles. And the pandemic hit. And then that job, you know, was gone. And then I looked around Los Angeles and I really wanted to be back in New York. So I ended up getting sober. I went to rehab. I got out of rehab and I had knocked down enough doors in Los Angeles and my world was really New York and my relationships and my circle. And I went back to New York in June of 2022 as a tester. The pandemic had, you know, the world had opened up again and my business started, you know, flowing again. So I went back and the next thing you know, I'm kind of having a meeting and a week turned into 3 weeks. And then I said, you know, I'm going to stay here. And, you know, the thought was to move the family back to New York City. So I spent that time when I met you, started working with you around August of 2022 in New York, newly sober and conducting a really thorough job search.
I remember that.
And then eventually after I met you, I did get a job and it was, ironically, you know, it was here in Los Angeles.
Got it.
In LA. So I'm working in LA. I have a great job. I'm very happy. I love it. And I love what I do. And so I'm working with a great group.
Awesome.
And yeah. So I got sober a couple of years ago. So everything, you know, on that front is, And then kind of just as a, you know, what was interesting through all this too is, you know, through a divorce. And so the running and the, you know, the mental health aspect of it, all that kind of comes in, you know, to play at some point.
What, going backwards for a minute, you know, you said you'd kind of just given up and just, you know, that, again, that picture, it is a very powerful picture, especially because you sent me that picture of you kind of asleep, passed out, whatever, on the streets in a city in LA. And then the next one was you running the marathon in LA. And it was a very powerful juxtaposition. And I'm curious, I what motivated you, what got you to rehab?
Well, you know, and that picture was an anomaly too. I mean, it's, you know, it happened. I was, you know, I think I was sitting on a, you know, eating pizza and I just like, you know, talked out.
Today's show is brought to you by my self-paced course, Peak Performance for Endurance Athletes, your ultimate guide to strategic fueling. This 7-part series is packed with evidence-based, easy-to-understand information with tons of visuals covering everyday nutrition, hydration, intra-workout fueling, training the gut, performance in micronutrient supplementation, and preparing for race day. Grab the link to my course in the show notes or on my website, eatforendurance.com. And once you're there, you can preview the first part of module one. You can check out the course curriculum and read the details detailed facts page. If you don't need or want a full course, I'm also selling several of the downloads from the course separately. They're mini eBooks on a variety of performance nutrition and everyday nutrition topics, and you can get each one for just $5 to $10. I also have a discounted bundle available. Again, head on over to my website and you can find the link. And lastly, if you're interested in one-to-one nutrition coaching, I do have some openings for new clients in mid to late April. You can fill out a new client inquiry form and schedule a free 10-minute call at my website if you're interested. All right, let's get back to the show.
So that, yeah, so I went from that. That was my end. That was my, that was captured, you know, to probably for somebody to show me, hey man, this is where we are. You know, let's get some help. So, I'm grateful. I'm grateful I have that photo, because it's a reminder, you know. So anyway, I was 215 pounds in that photo. I'm 265 on a good day today. You know, finally got the weight up because we were in the 250s there for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so a few days after that, I was sitting on my sofa, and I have the text, and I said, I'm ready to go. You know, that was big for me to raise my hand. It's so hard.
Mm-hmm.
To say
no, for sure. No, I mean, of course.
You're telling the world, you know, because you're doing it, you know, and everybody's going to find out. And that's the fear, because it's, you know, it's still considered a moral, you know, nobody asked for this thing. Nobody wants this thing. Nobody wants, you know, you didn't ask for this thing. But not to get into the moral thing with it, but some, it's still misunderstood, and there's still, you know, you lose people, and, that you've lived a certain way for such a long time, you can't imagine living without it.
Yeah.
So that was my bottom.
Yeah. And I think you meant 150, because you were, I was looking back, I was like, you were in the 200s. You were 154 pounds when I saw you.
No, I was 215 in that, 215 in that photo.
In that photo. And then you dropped a lot of weight. We were trying to get it up.
I got down to 150. Yeah.
Yeah. You got really late.
I got down, I'm up to 165, so I have a healthy, because I was, you know, in New York, and I would wake up, and I would swim, and I would run, and I would walk.
Yep, you were doing all the things, yep, 30, too much, 30, and then not and eating I was, anything.
And I was, I was doing the vegan thing when I met you.
You were, and we got you doing some different things, but, right. Yeah, so you did rehab in New York, or in LA, I imagine?
LA, Los Angeles.
Okay. Yeah. And was it like you made that decision, or did someone talk to you, or what?
No,
what was that process like? You did.
I did, because I didn't know any different. You know, I didn't know you don't have to, you know, some, you know, if anybody's listening, they don't have 30 days. And, you know, I mean, I did the private jet, luxurious, whatever. You don't have to, you know, it's, it's not, I didn't know anything. I just thought that's what you did.
Yeah. And what was that experience like for you going to rehab?
So that's what I did. And, it's kind of a blur. I don't think about it much. You know, when people hear that word, I know it's such a big word, but for me, it wasn't is the work that's done afterwards that got to me where I am today. You know, it was that I became physically addicted to alcohol. And that's a place to go. That's a safe place to detox and remove the substance. Mm-hmm. So you can then start doing the work is how I look at it.
Yeah.
And so what has... I was a luxury for me to be able to do it because like in New York or here, you know, when you go to various meetings and you meet people and they didn't have I have a lot of respect for those guys. You know, that construction worker that's doing the union job, he's doing it on his own and he's, you know, he doesn't have the ability to go, you know, finger paint and do whatever and have private, you know, chefs. I mean, you know, so anyway, I chose that route.
Yeah. And I mean, how have you navigated staying sober? Like, what does that look like?
Well, I have my program and, you know, everybody's got, you know, and I have a good friend of mine, one of my best friends. He got sober about a year before I did. So I'm not alone, you know, and I have a great network of people. And there are a lot of people that are either quitting drinking or have, you know, AUD, alcohol use disorder, alcoholism, that, you know, that's for those who don't know, it's when you continue drinking, when it causes problems in your life. So, I have a good network of new people and I have, you know, one of my best friends, you know, and ex colleague of mine for 20 years has gone through the same journey. It's to do it with somebody else, somebody who's done it before. You know, I am in a program. Mm-hmm. I do have a sponsor. I do step work and all that stuff. But, you know, there's no monopoly on sobriety. There's so many different ways, you know, people approach it. But I have a program that I work, you know, regularly.
Yeah. And so. I mean, especially in the endurance world, and, you know, we see a lot of like, you know, not just alcohol, but all kinds of substance abuse and different forms of addiction and people entering running or whatever sport they do, but often, like, especially I see in like the world of like ultra running where, you know, sometimes it's almost like a transfer of, transfer of addiction, but people kind of play, you know, they kind of pour all that energy into this new pursuit. And, you know, often with, you know, we were talking about pulling back, you know, I imagine, especially you were unemployed, you were by yourself in New York. It was kind of almost filling time. Right. And I remember you almost like you were just wandering the streets almost one night. I remember, it can be really hard to kind of take care of yourself safely, even in that way too, and really make sure you're not overusing exercise. Right.
You know, to that point about, you know, the amount of folks in recovery that are amazing athletes. I've met so many people along the journey, and I spoke to somebody who was like a D1 athlete, and I asked him, and I said, why do you think there's so many great athletes that are in recovery? You know, and his answer was the one that kind of made the most sense to me. And it kind of, when you imagine what we put ourselves through, you know, to hide it, to manage it, to function at a very high level when others probably would want to stay home and nap or whatever. I don't know. It's based on what we've been through that you have the ability. I think it's just nobody. Yeah. I understand it. However, it was put to me, you know, I think we're geared a little bit differently. You know, people that have it. So,
yeah. What are your kind of coping mechanisms right now? Like, it sounds like you have a strong social, you said support network, exercise, I'm sure is a release, but what else do you use to kind of cope? Because you're going through a lot right now. It sounds like.
Yeah. For me, I have no desire to drink. Like I can go to a bar and I go to, you know, I'm single and, I don't want to sit at, I eat out a lot. I don't want to sit at a table by myself. So I go to bars and I date and I, you know, I have zero desire. There's no obsession to drink and it's just not a thing, right? It's like, for me, I view it as, you know, if you're a kid with a peanut allergy, just don't give him peanuts. You'd be fine. You know, and so fortunately I'm blessed that I don't have to manage what you're talking about or cope.
Okay. Yeah. You know? Okay. You don't feel the pull. It sounds like.
No, I have no, I have no desire to drink because to me, I've had a lot of great things happen since I got sober, you know.
You have. That's true.
You know, so I don't want to give that up. And now I know it's still fresh enough to, I know how it feels to mm-hmm. have a hangover or to mm-hmm. have it in your body and not be able to perform at your highest level. So, I don't want to lose that. And then I also know, it's not going to solve anything. You know, for me, for example, and it's so true for many other people that are in this program or going through recovery, is it's not like I like alcohol. You know, I like chocolate. You know, chocolate tastes good. For me, alcohol doesn't taste good. It was a way to suppress feelings and not have to feel things that I didn't want to, you know? And you say, okay, that works for a long time. So then my experience has been, is once you go through the process of feeling those feelings and really going through them and having a great therapist and, you know, community sponsor, whatever it is. And then you go through, it's funny when you get sober and if you've been at it for a bit, all those feelings come flying at you at the same time. You know, and it can be overwhelming because you've been pushing them back for decades. And yeah. So all that stuff you've been suppressing starts coming at you. And so to be able to learn how to process those in a healthy way and basically acceptance, right? For me, it's acceptance. That's the one word that I would say, acceptance and gratitude are the two things that helped me get through this. And then also, you know, like my spirituality, I didn't really have much of one before. I kind of, you know, but, and then like the higher power thing that came into it. So all of that, you know, then after you kind of go through that process and find a higher power, for me anyway, and it can look, it can be a group, it can be a person, it can be, I'm not talking about, you know, conventional Judeo-Christian, mm-hmm. God, whatever it is for mm-hmm. me, then that I found that my obsession was to have a drink because, yeah. And then now when I have a bad day or I have a bad thought in the marathon, mm-hmm. I have muscle memory now to know that it passes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Thanks for explaining that.
When I first started mm-hmm. running, I used to run, you know, I started thinking about like, because I went into this marathon in such a different space than I was when I first got sober. And then some other personal stuff has happened since I, you know, since I got sober, it was fairly traumatic. And I used to run, you know, maybe in a more negative space, like anyway, like I was running from something mm-hmm. you know, and then now, life is pretty good and I feel a peace, you know, that I really haven't felt in so long. And I'm like, well, can I still run fast? You know, because I'm kind of a happy guy, you know, I mean,
you did just run fast.
I'm like, can I be a happy guy and run fast? You know, and the funny thing is, in that marathon, when I had some negative thoughts come in, I thought those were the thoughts that were fueling my speed, when in reality, those were starting to slow me down.
Yes. Yeah. What a realization. And then you change your thinking and you were able to kind of get back on track. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What, tell me a little bit about your relationship with food now. And I know we worked a lot on, mostly just, you know, as you were saying, you kind of were like, when I met you, were in more of that like running from things phase. And it really was like trying to slow you down, get you to chill, rest, whatever, and get you to fuel the work that you were doing. And also just kind of educating you on food. Like we really were kind of starting from square one with a lot of this stuff and you're kind of all over the map with your nutrition. But now, you know, that you've done a lot of therapy, you've done a lot of work, you're in this better headspace. You have this history of, you know, kind of a traumatic history with food and body and all these things.
Yeah.
What, where are you at now with all of that and feeding yourself and trying to make sure you're eating enough and body weight, all that kind of stuff. Like, where do you sit now?
Okay. So I took what you gave me and I stuck with it. And I was, you know, I've now had, you know, now I have the benefit of living alone for a couple of years almost. So, I gravitate toward what's easy. I prepare, I don't cook that much.
That I remember.
And, and so, I eat a lot of, do you want me to get into like what I eat? How can you guide me through this conversation?
So, yeah, I mean, you can talk about what you eat. I think first it would be interesting to hear about, just given the amount of work you've done on yourself and given that you have this history of basically restriction, you know, trying to make yourself really small and struggling with feeding yourself. And then like, you know, kind of, and then the alcohol abuse and all of that, like, how do you feel? So we can get into the details, but I'm actually right now more interested on your relationship with food more generally right now, like where, how you see it. And if you struggle with food at any point, especially now that you don't have the alcohol as that numbing substance.
Oh no, no, none. I don't struggle with food. I love food. And I try to keep weight on, you know, and I'm back to your program of trying to get 3 to 5, at least 300 grams of carbs a day, 100 grams of protein. Cause I'm always training for something now. And now I can really, my biggest hole in my game is sleep. It's not food anymore. And I know
we worked on that too. I remember.
And it's better, but it's not anywhere where it needs to be. But anyway, as far as everything, I mean, I can eat a bagel, pizza, and pasta in the same day. I love carbs.
Good.
I don't have any food restrictions. I love food. But my biggest hole in nutrition is frankly, is, you know, I saw your post today on Instagram and there's all these beautiful vegetables with different colors. And I'm like, I got to somehow figure out how to get those in my body.
Vegetables? You're not big on vegetables?
I love them, but living alone, they go bad. But anyway, I would say that's my hole in my game because I do love them so much. I need to figure out how to get those in. But the relationship with food is so healthy because, I mean, I burn so many calories. I burn so many calories, you know.
Well, you know, you'd be surprised. Just burning calories doesn't mean you have a good relationship with food. I mean, I think it's probably the work that you've done on yourself that's kind of set you up well for that, right?
So the nutrition is important for my performance.
Yep.
And so I have a healthy relationship with food because I respect what the food can do for me. And I've had a year and a half now of working, you know, with it. And so, I have a very healthy relationship and I have a respect for it. And I try to make sure I get what I, out of food. Like, for example, when we first met, talking about get as much as you can out of food versus supplements and things. The only supplement I take is omega-3. And then everything else I get from food.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Other than vegetables, I was going to ask you, what are you still kind of struggling with your nutrition? It sounds like getting the veggies in, the fruits maybe, or mostly veggies. And is there anything else that you're kind of still having trouble with?
Oh my God, I love fruit, by the way. We haven't talked about fruit. Like, and I don't get enough fruit, you know. I don't get enough fruit, I don't get enough vegetables. And I think if I can really start getting those in and make a conscious effort to put those in my body, I'll benefit. Because I don't really struggle with the protein. Being single, you know, it to say for the first time, I don't like cooking a lot. So I eat out quite a bit. And so that brings its challenges, I would say.
Yeah.
That's the biggest challenge. Yeah. And that's the easy way to get carbs too.
Yeah. Totally.
But how I get my veggies, bro, just so you know, it's like I'll go buy a big thing of spinach or broccoli and I'll cook it down and get it in my body. But right now it's more about getting the stuff in that I think I need versus really having really, you know, beautiful food experiences, if you will.
Well, I mean, I think the post you're referring to is something I reposted from. It was about how you shouldn't stress about organic and especially like the whole Dirty Dozen and all of that. And you should just focus on getting plant foods and, you know, in your body, and not, especially with like the cost of organic and just the cost of food prices generally, it's a lot of fear mongering. And I personally, I don't really pay attention to organic, and a lot of people, I mean, you can eat frozen veggies. If it's a concern that things are going to go bad, like buy some frozen vegetables or,
I'm so glad you know, you said that.
You can also, that. I remember a lot of our discussions were, because you didn't want to do much cooking, but you would do some assembling, and we kind of would do some Whole Foods kind of things and the rotisserie chicken. You know, like I remember like little bits and pieces. And, you know, sometimes it's like, well, if you're willing to just like roast some veggies, or, I mean, if that's not an option, but let's say it were an option, you could just roast a bunch of veggies and you can eat those up within, you know, 3 to 5 days or whatever. And you can kind of just like cook it for the week, or maybe maybe you are getting some frozen vegetables. Nutritionally speaking, they're great. They're frozen at the peak of freshness. It's more of a texture thing. A lot of people don't like it, but they're affordable and they don't go bad. So, I mean, there are lots of ways. Like smoothies are great, like for fruits and veggies and getting those in, and you can use frozen fruits and veggies for that. So there are many ways to get fruits and veggies in that's convenient and affordable. I have a lot of network with many, you know, single people who often are talking about like, oh gosh, I don't want to make this huge batch of food because it'll go bad. And it's like, okay, well, you can freeze like part of what you're making, or, you know, you can use these tactics, right? So I think it can be a challenging for many people, but that can sometimes just be a useful strategy. But just to throw some context in there.
No, I appreciate it, because I will start playing with the frozen, because I do try everything throughout. So I'll try the frozen vegetables because I haven't thought of it before. Because it just haven't, you know?
There are some that are better than others. Like, for instance, I find like frozen peppers, like the texture is kind of gross because it's not, it doesn't like a bell pepper is like, I think it's delicious because it has like the crunch. Obviously it's different if you cook it, but, so I personally, like, there's some that I'm just like, you know, but, you know, there are a lot of, like broccoli, cauliflower, peas, corn, like all those are pretty, like spinach, stuff like that. There are lots of plant foods that you can, you know, freeze. And I mean, you can even freeze like rice and other grains, and you can freeze almost everything. So there are lots of things that you can buy frozen and then just kind of, you know, it's just very convenient. So the reason why I wanted to go into it, because it's one that comes up all the time. Cause I mean, you're not the only one struggling. Even people who are not single and they have plenty of mouths who would eat vegetables, a lot of people are struggling with that. And even I sometimes struggle to get enough in, cause I'm just like, I don't feel like eating it or whatever. So, you are not alone. That's just the message. Awesome. And what's on the horizon? So you have the half marathon coming up, and do you have any fall races that you have your eyes on or anything?
Yeah, I'm gonna take another crack at CIM in November.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to, and then unfortunately with this time, you know, I'll knock out. I mean, the goal is to do the Abbott World Series, you know, knock those out. So I'm gonna really want. There's a couple. Like, I mean, I just really am excited about going to Tokyo. Some teammates just got back. And I heard so many great things about Tokyo. So
totally.
You know, I would love to do that. I would say my least exciting one is probably New York. It just sounds like such a pain to get.
No,
to
New York is so great.
The logistics. So I just don't like to wake up that early.
It's logistically very annoying because you have to wake up early and you have to wait around forever. But it's an amazing race. You're going to love it. It'll be so fun.
I've been, I'll find some stuff to do over the summer. I was even toying around with maybe the San Francisco Marathon in July. I don't know.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. What is there anything else that you want people to know about your experience, your journey, for anyone else who might be struggling? Anything else you want to kind of throw out there?
I mean, there's so much to talk about.
Put you on the spot.
What could you, maybe if you want to guide me, because I want to make sure that I'm delivering someone of a clear.
Up to you. Is there anything, I don't know, what's been helpful? Maybe there's something that someone else has said to you that's been helpful, or something that you want to share about your own experience. You know, I remember you saying when I asked if you'd come on my show, and you're like, if there's one person I can help, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't know. It's really up to you. It's an open-ended question.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, what I have found is that this is a, you know, it's a very large problem, and it's not addressed because it's still, there's still stigma associated with addiction, you know? Look, I mean, it was categorized as a disease in 1957, I think. The alcoholism was an addiction in the 80s, and it still looked as like a, you know, as a moral failure or, you know, like a choice, you know? And it's so scary for anybody to get assistance, you know? I mean, I was never going to do it. It must be, it's very hard. A lot of people don't. And they just kind of live with it and manage it, you know, and the families that are affected by it. And I wish I had done it so much sooner. What I would tell somebody, what I would, you know, it's not going to get better. It's not going to go away, you know, and it's, you can't see, like, you can't see the other side. You can't see, not, you're like, probably like, not me. I can't do it. But I don't know. For me, it was like a divine intervention, if you will, to raise my hand and say, I need help, you know? So, if there's somebody out there that's, probably has a family member or a friend or somebody, I don't have much advice, you know, other than, God, I wish, you know, I hope somebody that would maybe listen to this can see that I have it and see how far I've come so fast, you know, and yeah, that you can turn this thing around no matter what damage you think you've done or how far you've gone into this. And you may have 40 years, 50 years of, you know, use. I don't know. I hope that somehow maybe somebody will hear this message and think about it. And, you know, if somebody wants to DM me or something, you know, I'd be happy to chat about my experience, but there's millions of, you know, folks out there. There's so many resources and now on social media, you know, people are coming forward now and the celebrity community is in a big way, which is great. I think, you know, they have a platform in sports folks, you know, it's finally now, because in 20 years, you know, this is just a mental health issue is what it really is. And we're already starting to talk about mental health in the same vein as we are about, you know, physical health, and it's going to be part of the total pie. And, I hope there's something if I could help somebody in any way, you know, I mean, God, if I ever got a letter or a call or a text with somebody said what you said, or my experience, listen to you or whatever, you know, I did, you know, I changed my life or I got sober. I mean, God, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. And thanks for sharing all of this. You know, even, I mean, I learned a lot about you today that didn't come out in our sessions, right? I mean, we worked together for about 7 months, but, you know, kind of a little sporadically towards the end. And I think rehab was so fresh at that point, you know, you didn't talk much about it, right? So it was, I really enjoyed learning more about you. So thanks, Trey. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Well, thank you so much for, the dominoes were, you know, getting sober, meeting you and then John and this whole world now. And I always think about you. I do, you know, and when I do things, I'm like, oh, Claire. And then, the other day you popped in my mind. I'm like, oh, you know, you have to share your information with so many people.
I appreciate that.
Maybe a couple of stumps you. So I think you're doing great work. And I just downloaded your program.
The course. Yes.
For awesome. The one-on-one. So I look forward to diving into that and hopefully some more one-on-ones when I can.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's wrap up with, I just call my quick bites questions. What is your favorite pre-run meal or snack?
Oatmeal and coffee.
Awesome. What about after a workout?
That's a big hole for me. I usually don't have anything in the car with me, but I'll usually run to Whole Foods. I have to just get my, you know. Big run after a big Sunday long run, or a race, as a cheeseburger.
Okay. Awesome. What is the most interesting or exotic food you've ever tried? I don't know how much travel you've done, but
I don't think it's that interesting or exotic. I think most people would find uni. I love uni. I love the taste of it. Fresh uni.
That's sea urchin, right?
Yeah, it's sea urchin. Yeah. Okay. So that would probably be it.
Got it. How do you like your eggs cooked if you eat eggs? I can't remember if you do.
I do. Scrambled. Okay. I love them. Anything that's a conduit awesome. For hot sauce. Yeah.
Yeah. what is your favorite beverage?
Coffee.
Coffee? Nice. How much coffee do you drink?
Two cups.
Okay.
It's my favorite. You know?
That's right. Do you put anything in your?
What I've been doing recently is do a seltzer with tart cherry juice.
Oh, nice.
For the melatonin effect.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's a very good cool. one.
My current obsession is pomegranate juice with lime seltzer or lemon seltzer and lots of ice. And it's just so tasty. My fave.
Yeah.
Super yummy. Similar to the tart cherry situation. What are your comfort foods?
Pizza.
Pizza? Nice. Do you miss New York pizza?
100%.
Do you get good pizza in LA? It's such crap out here in Santa Cruz. I'm just like sad.
Prince Street Pizza, it's on Elizabeth and Prince in New York, has opened up out here about 4 or 5 locations, and it is good.
Okay, you're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're lacking on the bagels, but we got
it's yeah. The bagel situation is dire out here.
One bagel place, but yeah, pizza. Pizza's my comfort food.
I feel like LA's in a much better place than where I'm at, but yeah, totally. Do you enjoy ice cream? And if so, what's your... Oh, actually, no, you're kind of lactose intolerant, aren't you? I remember. Yeah, you don't do dairy.
No. I didn't.
You didn't. Now you do?
We haven't talked about that in a big way.
Oh, okay.
I love it. I love ice
Good.
Cream.
Good. That's great. What's your favorite flavor?
Okay, I'm going to plug. I've got some friends out here. They opened up this thing, and it's amazing. It's called Hokey Pokey, and Hokey Pokey is a flavor. It's like a toffee flavor that comes from New Zealand. It's like a... And so Hokey Pokey ice cream is now like my new favorite thing.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, it's famous like in New Zealand. It's like their go-to flavor. But yeah, it's like a toffee.
Wait, so you're eating like yogurt and milk and all that stuff now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got to work.
I started with when I got the,
That's right. Yeah.
I switched to milk.
Cool. Yeah.
It still does a little something to my stomach. I don't do too much, but yeah.
Okay. And last question, top 3 items of gear that are most essential to your active lifestyle.
Well, I have to have my Saucony, Endorphin, shoes. Those are my trainers. And then the Garmin Fenix 6 or whatever version I'm going to have. I can't live without this. I check I check all my stats in the morning before I check my emails. And then for my active lifestyle, my God, those are my thank you.
Strava?
Oh, No. I'm wearing them right now.
Earbuds.
I can't go. If I can't find these, I'll go right on Amazon. And it's the Airbeats. So I can't run without them. I get a panic attack when I can't find them. So it's these.
Nice. And I forget because your like real name or legal name is George, but you go by Trey.
It's George.
Remind me where Trey came from.
George Olin Duncan III, and in the South, Trey is a common nickname for a third, like who are those Treys?
Oh, okay, got it.
Like when you hit a three-pointer, you hit Trey.
Got it, okay. So I'm sure I asked you this like ages ago, but I was like, where did Trey come from? I mean, it was George Duncan, everyone. I have to remind myself, oh no, it's Trey.
Yeah, my mom said I'm not calling him George. My dad said you can call him whatever you want, so.
That's hilarious. Awesome, Trey. It was so great to see you. I'm so proud of you. You're doing great. I'm excited to hear how you like the course, which is my new course, Peak Performance, of course, which I've been plugging everywhere. So if people want to get it, it is available. I wish you the best of luck in the half marathon and can't wait to hear more from you.
Thank you.
All right. Awesome. Have a good one.
You too. Take care.
That's our show for today. I hope you all enjoyed that one. And if you did, please make sure you hit follow or subscribe wherever you listen. And if you have a minute, I would be so grateful if you could also rate and review my show. If you're able to support the show financially, I have a Patreon page and I'd love to see you over there. Patreon members get some really great perks, including free merchandise, huge discounts on my digital downloads, and so much more. Thank you so much for your support. Please feel free to email me anytime, claire@eatforendurance.com, if you have feedback, questions, or topic requests. All right. Thank you so much. And I will see you all next time.